Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And got a, man, just something we've just been thinking about a long time. A lot of research going into this. Mark has put out, Mark has sent me, it's a list of movie questions. You know, what's your favorite movie, favorite drama, favorite horror movie? Lots of different questions, maybe about 30 questions in all, because it's like for supposed to be for one a day. But that spawned an idea. So
I got it right here.
So, by the way, this is the this is a wrestling podcast. We talk about the wrestling you need to grow, wrestling you grew up with, the wrestling you need to watch now, and stuff. And today we're combining a lot of that together because I guarantee you we're going to talk about something on this show no one's ever talked about. What we're going to do?
Probably.
So share some of the things off of this movie list. This is going to be a future episode.
So what we'll do is come up with one movie to answer each one of these questions.
Yeah, you can't do
use the same movie twice.
Right.
So the questions are your favorite movie. So you guys be thinking about it so you can share it with us. So
right.
Your favorite movie, the last movie you watched, your favorite action adventure movie, favorite horror, drama, comedy. Each one of those.
Yeah.
Movie that makes you happy. Movie that makes you sad. A movie that you know the whole script to.
Yeah.
Favorite director. Favorite movie from childhood. Favorite animated film.
Hmm.
A movie that you used to love, but now you hate. Your favorite quote from any movie. First movie you saw in theaters and the last movie you saw in theaters. The best movie you saw last year. A movie that disappointed you the most. Your favorite actor. Your favorite actress. Most overrated movie. Most underrated movie. Favorite character from any movie. Favorite documentary. A movie that no one would expect you to love. A movie that is a guilty pleasure. Your favorite classic movie. Movie with the best soundtrack. A movie that changed your opinion about something. And your least favorite movie.
Huh.
So that's coming up.
So that's going to be a lot of work, and that's probably going to be maybe two or three episodes.
Yeah,
because we just don't want to give the answers. We want to talk about them,
right? And then you maybe have some honorable mentions for some of these things, maybe. And
so this spawned the idea of we were talking about wrestling directors.
Uh-huh.
So what directors, if they were wrestling bookers, what would that look like?
I could see like Michael Bay being the Attitude Era WWE
right
director. Yeah. That was like one of the first ones that came to mind. I could see him definitely because that's like the pyro and the explosion.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Know, no, that was that's
you
awesome.
Know, everything I could see that I could almost see.
He would definitely be in favor of Foley going off the cage.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, he would ratchet that up to 11. So I was thinking George Lucas would be the Chikara guy.
Mm-hmm. That's about right, yeah.
Because, like, if you think about it, if you've heard anything about Chikara, it's just all these characters, and they do these crazy storylines. It's like the cantina scene.
Right.
And you can't say the word cantina scene without going...
What an awful song, man.
Oh, it's great. We played that in high school band.
Yeah.
And I just had the playing that on the trombone.
What about like Quentin Tarantino for 80s era Jim Crockett Promotions?
The
ultra violence of the War Games.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
All the incredible promos that were delivered, and because that's his thing. Great promos in his movies.
Yeah. Oh golly.
You know, Hard Times. It's directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, what would?
You know, the War Games, the violence of something like that, directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh yeah, and he would just take it to.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness. So was Dusty Rhodes the Quentin Tarantino?
I think Dusty Rhodes fancied himself the Marlon Brando.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot he loved Brando, and there's a lot of the make it good, make it count thing. When they broke his arm was a Marlon Brando quote from a movie where they were going to break his arm.
Right.
A lot of people thought he was telling them make it good for the camera. He was actually saying, if you're going to break my hand, make it good. Because Marlon Brando said, that was the name of that. Because I've seen the movie.
From Here to Eternity?
No, it's a Western.
Oh.
One-Eyed Jacks,
uh-huh.
Maybe, I think is the name of the movie. and he's like a gunslinger in town. They string him up, break his arm, and that's what he tells them. Something along, make it count or something like that.
Yeah.
So and then he did the great Kabuki, are you an assassin?
Yeah.
You know, which is an excellent, excellent promo.
Oh yeah. And like that's no one. There's such a commitment to just this over the top, and like nobody wants to do that anymore.
No. Everybody wants to be cool.
Everybody wants to be cool. And
nobody wants to say, you know, the woods are lonely, dark, and deep, and I have promises to keep.
Yeah. Well, you did. You do. Oh, that was good. That was
a good promo.
It was. It was great.
You can go to the 3Count YouTube channel and see me cut that promo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was one of my finest moments.
Not as good as the one in the cellar, the
broom closet. Yeah, that was a good one, too.
I took you to the mountains of madness. I introduced you to the old ones, and they whispered a song in your ear that's as old as time itself. Not that I have watched that over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And
you want to know the inspiration for that?
I think I do, but yeah, I want you to tell everybody.
What do you think it is?
I mean, you told me. Right, I can't remember.
It's a combination of the Cthulhu, H.P. Lovecraft mythos.
Okay.
The Mountains of Madness and the Old Ones, and all that comes from H.P. Lovecraft.
All right, and I have no idea what that is.
You've never heard of Cthulhu?
Nah.
You've never heard H.P. Lovecraft?
Nah.
Okay. He's a horror writer from like years and years and years ago.
Gotcha.
He's a really, really influential horror author.
Gotcha.
And the song is old as time itself, and the sound, it sounds like razors through flesh.
Yeah.
Is from the movie Hellraiser.
Ah.
And the one line that I didn't get to use was, and I did use it to an extent, but not the entire line, your suffering will be legendary.
Yeah.
Even in hell.
Yeah.
Is the rest of that line. But I left that part off because I didn't want to offend your delicate sensibilities. But your suffering will be legendary even in hell is also from Hellraiser.
So wait, okay. Okay, now I understand what that means. Okay, gotcha. Let me just hit the pause button. Have you seen the new It?
No, we're going. As you know, I'm going to be in Orlando for 11 days. And in Orlando, at Disney Springs, they have a movie theater that not only do you get to see the movie, before the movie, you go in and they have tables.
Yeah.
And you order a meal and you can get drinks and you can do all, and that's something we've always wanted to do.
Right, right.
And since It was coming out and we knew, like, we can avoid the spoilers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've read the book, so I know how it ends.
Right.
So it's not like it's a... But,
yeah.
You know, I've still tried to avoid learning too much about how they did anything in the book, in the movie. But we decided, hey, that'll, because it's so, even like in late September, early October, it's still 90-something degrees in Florida.
Right.
And with all the hurricane that came through, the humidity is probably going to be ridiculous with all that standing water in the lower part of the state. So we just figured, you know, that'll be a great thing to do at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon one day when it's really hot.
Yeah.
Just to go sit for 3 hours and get out of the heat and do this thing that we've always wanted to do, which is go to a place where you can order a meal and watch the movie.
I do that in my house all the time.
Well, I do too. but I've never done that.
That's cool, man.
So we're going to do that down there. And then I'm going to, when I get back, Ethan wants to go see it. So I'm going to take him to see it.
My kids, so the kids saw the 80s TV version.
Mm-hmm.
You let me borrow the DVD to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, my kids have just been begging to go see this movie. And it's like, I just can't do it, man. It's just like, I can't. At this point, it's taken I was like, there'll be a time you're old enough and we'll go see it. My son's 10. Like, you'll be all right right now.
I don't know, but I've heard from a lot of people that this is a terrifying movie.
Right.
It really is a scary movie. That's what I'm afraid is going to let me down. Because I want that. Like, I haven't seen a terrifying movie in so long. And I want to. Like, I haven't been scared at a movie in years, and I want to be scared during
that. That would
film.
Be a big difference between you and me. Yeah. I do not want to be scared.
Oh, I do, man. I want to be thinking about this movie a month later when the lights are out.
Yeah, every time you want to think about this, every time you see a red balloon.
Yes, and I just haven't had that experience from a movie in a Long, long time. I'm trying to, like, maybe High Tension or Switchblade Romance, depending on the country you're in. But it's a French horror film. So, and it was really scary.
So if Stephen King is writing an episode of Raw or pay-per-view, what is that? I mean, how does that come across? Well,
it depends on which Stephen King you're getting.
I mean, that's true. That's true.
Because there's different eras. There's alcoholic, cocaine addicted Stephen King that was writing these just incredible stories like Carrie and Id and Christine and Cujo. Or is it the Mr. Mercedes Stephen King? Or is it when Stephen King went through the Green Mile chapter of his life? So it kind of depends on how it looks, depending on which Stephen King you get. Incredible author.
Right.
Phenomenal. I mean, I think that's probably an understatement. He's one of the most prolific.
Oh, yeah.
Writers.
Him and James Patterson, how many, like, they're writing like several books a year.
Well, I think the difference is, I don't want to say something that's not true, but I've heard that James Patterson doesn't, and it may not be true.
No, it is true.
But that he doesn't write all of his books. No. He has people help him.
Right.
Like, he develops the stories, and other people might fill in the words and that kind of thing. But I'm pretty sure King's not doing that. I think King is writing it. Not only does he write his own, he's written books under assumed names as well. Richard Bachman and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, he's a fairly prolific writer.
Who, see, when I was thinking Tarantino, I had him pegged for ECW.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. But ECW would, because there's some good promos there, too. And,
right.
And the violence level was, you know, yeah, I could see him doing ECW as well. I can't think of anybody else that, like, comes to mind unless it was, like,
Bob Zombie,
Sergio Leone,
right?
You know, with the good, the bad, and the ugly in movies, you know.
Rob Zombie would be CZW.
Yeah. Yeah, probably CZW, yeah.
So, let me throw this out at you. Changing subjects just a little bit. Because I said CZW, and it made me think of this match that I want to get your thoughts on.
The guy jumping off?
Well, no, it is that guy. You know, Joey Janela jumped off the roof or whatever. So, when we were at the Scenic City Invitational in Tennessee back in, I guess, first weekend of August, Joey Janela wrestled this guy named Darby Allin, a former skateboarder guy that and during the match, Joey Janela duct tapes his hands behind his back. And then takes him, slings him into the rope. Darby Allin springboard flips over Joey Janela, drop kicks him out of the ring, and then does a suicide dive with his hands duct taped behind his back. It was absolutely incredible. Then they fight outside the ring. He does all this stuff with his hands duct taped. It was at the one hand, it's like, this is absolutely, what are you thinking? But in a sense, it was like the athleticism it took to do that. It drew the crowd in. It was great. And then Joey Janela does a spot where he's in the corner. He's going to hit him on a chair, but he ends up sitting in the chair, and he gets monkey flipped, and he lands it on the chair. So these are all great moments. Well, then Darby Allin posts like a highlight video on, I think, Instagram. And you see him doing this thing everywhere. Where, you know, he's at one place, he's handcuffed, and he's doing these same spots. And for me, when I saw that, it was like, it took something away from it. Now, I understand, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, I understand that's part of the deal, you know.
But used to it was part of the deal, and you didn't see it.
That's right. That's right. And so, I guess my question with you, do these guys need to be smarter about these spots, not just in you're going to get yourself killed, not just that, but that, you know, if the midnight, what exposed the wrestling business to me is I went to a show in Greenville. I saw the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express go through a spot where one guy's got an arm bar and he's trying to make the tag, and it's just this spot. I saw it doing it in Greenville that following Saturday. I saw him do it in Liberty, the same spot, and then I saw it on TV, and it's like, wait a minute, How'd that guy fall for that twice? Right. That kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now they got to realize everything's on the internet. Right. So if you do something in Hoboken, New Jersey, everybody around the world sees it because it's on video. So I would love your just thoughts on that.
No, you just summed it up. Used to, you could do that. It didn't matter. You could book Abby, and you'd know Abdullah the Butcher's coming in to do his thing, and you just saw Abdullah the Butcher in the wrestling magazine.
Yeah.
So when you got to see Abdullah the Butcher, that's why he didn't stay places very long.
Right.
He would come in, he would do his deal, he would have the match, he'd bust the Sheik open, and then him and the Sheik, the Sheik's another example of a guy. Bruiser right. Brody is another guy that would come in and he would do his thing. But once you've seen it, you've seen what he can do.
Right.
And he'd go somewhere else and do it. But it was cool because there they had seen him in the wrestling magazines too.
Right.
And they had not seen him before. So then you come in, you put him against Kerry Von Erich. I'm just throwing out generic names here. But you take him to Texas and you bring him in against Kerry Von Erich. And he does another 6 months with Kerry Von Erich where they travel around and do it. And then he's got to leave and he goes to Memphis and he does it with Jerry Lawler.
Right.
Because the people in Memphis have saw him in the wrestling magazines, but they haven't seen him live before. And then by the time he gets back to the Carolinas, it's been 3 years.
Yeah.
And you could do it over again. But now these guys go out and do the same thing. And once you've seen it, you've seen it. And they come back to your town the very next week, and they're what are they going to do?
Right. So let's tie this back into our original topic. M. Night Shyamalan, you know
him too.
You know his movies. He's kind of painting himself into corners. There's got to be this twist at the end,
right?
You know.
But I always thought like the coolest twist is no twist at all.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is now when he makes a movie, he goes in saying, "Man, I got to do this.
I got to tag something."
Now Darby Allin's going into a match. Well, I got to do something with my hands tied behind my back every night
because that's why I got booked.
Right.
Right, because I can do this, so now I have to do that. And he'll probably eventually get hurt.
Well, he was doing all this because, I think we talked about this on the show, he shattered his elbow at an Evolve show. He got hit in the elbow with a chair, and it, like, split it open. The grotesque injury. And it's just like...
When I hear, like, somebody else, this is not an original thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to steal it from somebody who's actually drew money into business. But I can't remember who it was. It might have been Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Somebody who's actually made a lot of money. When you hear wrestling referred to as an art, the art form, the art of professional wrestling, used to be to make it look like you were hurting somebody without hurting them.
Yeah.
That's the art of professional wrestling. The art of wrestling is not flipping and flopping and doing all that stuff. That's not the art.
Right.
The art is to make it look like you're hurting somebody without hurting them, but now everybody hurts each other for real and nobody believes it.
Yeah. No, you're right. And now the art is... the athleticism of it, which wasn't there, you know, 20 years ago. And maybe
nobody ever talked about Harley Race's work rate.
Maybe guys didn't cut flips 20 years ago because they're like, you know, if you do these every night, you're going to tear your legs up.
Well, yeah, and you also would see a guy like Ric Flair wrestle into his late 50s, early 60s.
Right.
By having the same safe match every night.
Yeah, that's very true.
And how many guys are in there... early 40s that are burned out now.
Right.
See Jericho. I mean, he comes back and he's still over, but he works a real safe style.
Right.
You know? Nothing wrong with that.
No. No. And So M. Night, how would he book a wrestling show? Would he, you know what I had him booking? The Black Scorpion.
Yeah. The Black Scorpion would be good.
I want to do a what if episode. What if Al Perez had been the Black Scorpion?
Or what if the Black Scorpion had gotten over? That might be a what if it had worked? What if the Shockmaster hadn't fallen?
I don't think
those are a little small what ifs.
What if,
like, what if I would see Scorsese doing.
Yeah, okay.
Like mid-90s all Japan pro wrestling.
Yes.
Like Misawa and Kobashi.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Hansen and all like that. That would like Martin Scorsese because it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. It'll never be more perfect.
Right. And it's this.
Dr. Death and Terry Gordy.
It's this believable violence.
Yes. It's just, it's controlled chaos.
that somebody could die at the end of this.
Right. And guys bumping on their heads and safely doing it. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, just, yeah, I could see him doing that. Like, who would be the director for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla? Like J.J. Abrams. Or something. I don't know.
What about Christopher Nolan? What would he direct?
Christopher Nolan. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Maybe he directs Wrestle Kingdom. Because it's really long and it's really good. But
at the end, you're kind of like...
Right.
Good. That was really good. I don't know that I'm ever going to watch it again, but it was really good.
Yeah. What was the...
Except for The Dark Knight, which I will continue to watch for years.
So, PWG, who's directing that? Let's think. Who's a good... Maybe that's like, Adam Sandler. I don't know.
Like... Jeez, man. I was going to say Paul Thomas Anderson. But I don't know.
What else is he directing?
There Will Be Blood and Magnolia. And, I mean, he's like real art house.
I didn't like that There Will Be Blood.
What?
I didn't
like that. I thought that was one of the most... Daniel Day-Lewis.
I watched the movie.
Brilliant performance.
And I thought his performance was great, but I had no idea what was going on in that movie.
It was just about the corruption of one man over greed. It's just how greed corrupted this guy.
Right, but I guess I was looking for more. I mean, I just didn't.
Where he says to his own, this kid that he had raised from being a child, he didn't raise this kid because he loved this kid. Like, he raised this kid specifically so when he went into a town, he would look like he cared about people because he had a son.
Oh.
And he says to him at the end, like, you were just a bastard in a basket. That's all you were to me.
Yeah.
He's just a bad person.
Right.
Daniel Plainview is just awful.
Is that the difference between, like nowadays, like, even, you know, Sons of Anarchy, you talk about Breaking Bad, like, the hero is the villain.
Mm-hmm.
The hero is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that has to do with anything, but...
Well, that's society. I mean, there was a time in horror films where you identify with the victim.
Right.
You know, and the cameras followed the victim around. Then you had this movie called, I think it was The Bird in the Crystal Plumage, or it was Bay of Blood. I can't... It was an Italian horror film.
Right.
And it followed the point of view of the killer. It was one of the Italian giallo films.
Yeah.
And instead of identifying with the victims, you would see the victim in a room and the point of view was that of the killer coming into the room and you would just see their hands.
Uh-huh.
And the big reveal was who is the killer at the end. That was what the reveal, you know, that was the twist of the film, the crux of the film. And that transferred over to Halloween, the original Halloween, where you saw the film through the eyes of view of the antagonist, not through the eyes of view of the protagonist.
Right.
Friday the 13th did the same thing. And that's just what we've done in our society. We made Jason Voorhees. You don't go see the movie to see the people survive.
Right.
You go see the movie to watch the creative way in which Jason Voorhees kills the victim. Or you go see Saw not to see people figure the traps out and live. You go to see Saw for the torture porn of watching somebody get their arms twisted and their neck snapped and their legs cut off.
So let me ask you this. As society changed and the taste like that changed, has that affected how we watch wrestling? That now, like... We want guys to jump off a building through light tubes and into a truck. And
I don't think everybody wants to see that.
Right. I mean, I hate that kind of...
I don't think that is popular. It's popular with like a certain subsection of 250, 300 people.
Right. But what I guess what I'm... We seem bored with a lot of modern wrestling.
Well, it's because it's boring.
Well, that's true.
It's, you know, used to, and we talk about it all the time. I mean, they would take and say, Heath, here's what I want you to talk about. And there's, doom, 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 doom.
Yeah.
And then they would put this promo together.
Yeah.
It would go out. But now it's, here's, here, Heath. 40 minutes from now, you need to go out there and say all
right.
That.
So,
and that's just not, I mean, yeah. That's just what the guys who are there say.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never been there. But even I know from what we do, it's here. You need to say this, this, and this. And
I've read, I mean, they've leaked Raw scripts, and it is Bray Wyatt, the whole promo.
Yeah.
Do you think part of that is they used to, some of the best promos were the local show promos.
Uh-huh.
And they knew, all right, Saturday, they knew every Saturday they were going to be cutting promos.
Right.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to be cutting promos. And they're all in that room, and they're all trying to top each other, and they're all feeding off each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not that environment anymore, because now it is, all right, going out there live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely different. It's completely live cutting in a ring than with Bob Caudle over to the side in front of a backdrop.
Well, it is, but you also, sometimes you get magic, like with Cena and Reigns.
No, right,
when, you know, you got to react to what a guy's saying. A guy stumbles his lines, and you can say, man, it's called a promo. You're learning how to cut one if you're going to be the top guy.
You're right.
You can get those little moments that you don't always get, you know.
But that's just the beauty of Cena, the genius of...
He can do... He gets away with stuff other people can't.
Right. Hey, you shouldn't have shot on Roman Reigns like that. That was...
John Cena is a very, very underrated promo.
By far.
Anybody that doesn't think John Cena cut some of the best promos in the history of the business... It's crazy. There may not be anybody better at that hard sell the week before an event.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, John Cena's incredible.
Yeah.
When he starts cutting, when he's serious.
Yeah.
And he's cutting that money promo, there's a reason he's a top guy.
Oh, I'm watching No Mercy. I want to see Cena and Reigns, and I want to see Lesnar and Strowman.
I do, too.
So, who would you pick to direct it? Who's directing No Mercy?
Who's direct that those matches? Steven Spielberg, man.
Yeah.
Do it big.
Spielberg is your WrestleMania guy.
Yeah, Spielberg's your WrestleMania guy. So maybe No Mercy, I don't know. Maybe not Spielberg. But, yeah, Spielberg's definitely WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Man. Definitely not the guy who directed Tommy Boy. You don't want him directing... Lesnar.
But that's who's writing for WWE now is those type of folks.
Right. It's a bunch of guys. And we say it a lot. I mean, it really is people that are not alpha males, for like lack of a better term. The alpha males are in the ring, and the other guys are trying to tell them what their voice is.
Yeah.
And you see it every once in a while when somebody gets to go out off the cuff and just do something, how much better it is.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even Miz. Well, Miz just gets to go out and be him and just do his, like, that deal with Daniel Bryan. How much better is he than when he sounds like he's reading a script?
Yeah. But here's the deal. This is what I love. I mean, think what you think about the Miz. Miz, the promo he cut on Daniel Bryan is a promo he's been cutting since he was a kid looking in the mirror trying to get on the real world.
Yeah.
Like, I think the Miz is living his...
He is.
I mean, I have such... I don't have to like him as a wrestler.
Right.
But as somebody who's like, man, he's doing what he...
And I don't like him as a wrestler.
Right.
But I don't know him as a person to dislike him. I'm sure he's a fine gentleman. He's probably a lovely guy to hang around. Evidently, he loves wrestling.
Right.
Why would I not get along with the guy?
Right, right.
I just don't like the presentation of him sometimes on television.
Yeah.
But God, I mean, he's married to a gorgeous woman, and he's living his dream.
Yeah.
How can you hate the guy for that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I can't hate him. I can't fault a man for that.
No. I mean, I really can't, because everybody who hates him would trade places with him tomorrow. Yeah.
So one more. I got one more for you.
Okay.
Clint Eastwood. What's he directing?
Nothing.
Really?
What's he kind of... I mean, the only thing I could see Clint Eastwood directing is like, you know,
Did Clint Eastwood direct the Dusty Rhodes when he came back to team with Dustin? Was that Eastwood?
Maybe so. Yeah, that's a good Eastwood thing.
Terry Funk is an egg-sucking dog.
That is such a great promo.
Arn Anderson is a walk behind her. And when you're a walk behind her, the view never changes, baby. The view never changes, baby. The view never changes.
That is an incredible promo. The Earps were blood. The Kennedys were blood. The Rhodes are blood. And I don't need you to look for another man. You know, what did he say? Oh, God. It's just, all I need from you is a hug and a kiss to seal the deal, baby.
Dusty plus Dusty equals Texas. That's the thing. I mean, the same emotions that we get from movies, we're hoping to get from wrestling.
And there's no emotion left in it anymore.
No. That's why the thing with, you know, with Cena and Reigns was so good, because it's like, oh.
It made people believe.
Right. And then they're like, they were mad at themselves for believing.
Yeah.
It's like, we won't let ourselves enjoy it. I mean, Brock Lesnar's the most real thing, but they were like, ah, Brock Lesnar's only got three moves.
How many moves
did Andre the Giant have?
That butt bump.
Headbutt, and body slam.
Yeah, I mean.
And the nerve lock.
Yeah.
Four moves.
How many offensive moves did Ric Flair have?
Chop, knee drop, working the leg, figure four. Various suplexes. And there you go. Six. How many off? I watched an hour long. I watched the Iron Man match. This is a long time ago. This is 10, 12. I mean, the Iron Man between Rock and Triple H. Hour long match. I think 10 wrestling moves.
Right.
I mean, how many moves did Austin have?
Bret Hart and Steve Austin, the greatest match in WWE history. How many wrestling moves did they use?
Punch, kick, that's it.
I mean, it's not hard. It's just
right.
Not hard, man.
But that's the difference now. It's like if by the standard people are judging Brock Lesnar, right, he only does four moves. All right, you take that same standard, you put it on Stone Cold Steve Austin post-injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrible. By your standard.
Put it on anybody. Put it on Dusty Rhodes. Put it on Hulk Hogan. Put it on Ric Flair. Put it on Harley Race. Put it on anybody.
Couldn't put it on Canyon.
This is true.
Canyon was an innovator.
He was. That guy's underrated.
I agree. Yeah,
Chris Canyon's good.
He did a different move every match.
I loved Mortis. I thought it was a great gimmick.
That's one thing I really like about Jason Kincaid. Real small guy. But he has some really innovative offense.
It's just like, you know, everybody loves, what's his name, Mauro Ranallo, because he knows the names of all these moves. I don't recall Jim Ross calling a move by the name.
There was a move at the three count show. And it's the move Sheamus does. And a lot of people do it where you get the guy on his shoulders and you just kind of flip over with him. And I said, there's Skyler with a roll. I don't know what the name is. We're just going to call it a Skyler roll, you know? And I just didn't. What's
the,
you know?
Who cares about the names of these moves?
Like, even in UFC, he's got the chimichanga lock. Like, what is this? He's got him in an arm hold.
Yeah.
He's choking him. He's going to break his leg.
The chimichanga lock.
Is that not a move?
That's borderline, boy. That's borderline.
What are you talking about? I was trying to think.
No, it's just the first thing that popped into your head.
Like the Kimura lock and all.
Yeah, key locks and Kimura.
I mean, at the end of the day, it all goes back to David Crockett.
Look at him. He got him. Watch him. Watch him right here now. Watch him.
He's going to hurt it.
Now watch Dusty. Watch him real close.
Watch him. He's going right here. Look at that elbow. You can't hit him with the tip of the elbow.
No.
Hey, don't hit us with the tip either. DoubleDropKick.com is where you can find
But if you do want to give us a tip, you can find us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/DoubleDropKick. There's some links in the show notes. You give $1 a month, you're going to get into our private Facebook group, patrons only, where we do live videos in there and we talk about stuff. And those people really give input into the show. This is part of the show where Mark checks his phone.
But there's a reason. I'm looking.
$5 a month gets you some things. You do $10 a month, you're going to get a signed picture from a wrestler. Right now, the picture you're going to get is DDP, WWE Hall of Famer. Pretty cool. So, yeah, again, that just helps offset some of the cost. As you can see, we're trying to upgrade our studio here.
Something that I wanted to touch on, because I always like to stop you in the middle to bring something else we can up and talk about for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was great the other day on Twitter when myself and Bruce Mitchell called you out.
Right. Yeah.
Some guy was like, the worst thing that's ever happened in wrestling is the what chant. And then you were like, no, the worst thing that ever happened to wrestling was the you deserve it chant. And then Bruce Mitchell and myself called you out.
Right. And I went back and I'm like, what are they talking about? Because you guys were like, is that really the worst thing that's ever happened in wrestling? And I went back and I'm like, whoa, I didn't realize. I went back and I thought the guy had said, the worst chant in wrestling is this. And I was just trying to say that you deserve it was the worst chant. And then, so you and I get into it. Then that other guy's like, oh, guys, he thought we were really.
Which it kills me because it's always like this. This dipstick is like, guys, it says I'm sarcastic in the heading of my. And I'm like, dude, there's a sarcasm dripping off of everything that we're saying to one another.
Right.
And you know, but like, so you can, Shivani said something the other day. Somebody tweeted him something and he tweeted something back kind of crappy. And they were like, dude, it was just trying to be sarcastic. And he's like, why is it okay for all of y'all to be sarcastic? But when I'm sarcastic, everybody takes it serious.
Right.
It just means I'm better at it than you. My sarcasm is better than yours if you think I'm serious.
This is true. Mark's never sarcastic. He's always shooting from the hip, shooting from the heart. He always means what he says what he means, and does what he does, including that loud water bottle, which keeps ice in there for 7 days straight.
It's great.
Yep.
Let me tell you how much I paid for that.
$70.
It hurt your feelings now.
The last cup, yo, this is a $50 cup.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to tell you.
How much in that spit bottle?
That I got in a case.
Mark buys bottled water to pour out.
So I can have something to spit in.
The hurricane hits. Everybody stocked up on bottled water. Mark goes, buys a case of 24, goes home, pours it out so he can spit tobacco juice in it.
I pull the Chevy Chase from the Three Amigos. Throw the canteen on the ground.
It's Steve Martin and Martin Short are like, yeah. Would you like to kiss me on the veranda? On the lips would be fine. That's a great movie.
The Three Amigos, man, awesome movie.
I think one day, maybe in the patrons group, maybe we build it up. That we're going to sing My Little Buttercup in the patrons group and see if we can drum up some patrons. Because I do think Heath and Mark singing is an untapped potential.
I've told you, I think if we really wanted to get a ton, because as you know, I'm afraid of roller coasters.
Yes.
But for money, I'd be willing to ride anything in the world, probably.
Right.
And I've always thought that one way to get like a channel with millions of views was to start a YouTube channel called Mark Rides.
Yeah.
... And then, you know, the Hulk. And strap a camera to myself and ride it.
Here's the only thing, though. Okay. All right. You're 6'5". Okay. I'm just going to be honest. Like, even if you were not big, just your height, a lot of these rides you're not going to be able to ride. It's a sad thing.
It really is. Like, I couldn't ride Forbidden Journey last year at Universal. I mean, it's not this.
Forbidden Journey.
It's a Harry Potter simulator. But anyway.
That's like, what are we talking about
But
here?
It's not this. it's this.
Yeah.
Like the thing come over my shoulders and it wouldn't make it down.
Yeah.
To where it had to connect to, because it's just, you know, I'm so big. Look at me. Look at me. I'm so big.
We could have been, speaking of booking our wrestling careers, we could have been the deal where, like, you're this tall, lean wrestler and I'm like way more than you do. And I'm like the little manager.
Right.
Oh,
I don't know that I've ever been lean.
Hey, I've got pictures to prove it.
Yeah, I guess when I was like 13. I mean,
you were not lean. I mean, you were the right size. Unlike we are now. We're not. I can't remember if I'm short for my weight or big for my height. How long's that ice been in there?
You're just short and fat. I'm tall and fat. This ice has been in here since it's about 8 o'clock this morning.
So you spend $100 on a flask so you can keep your water cold, and you empty it out every morning and put new ice in it.
That is actually unsweetened tea in there.
Unsweetened tea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it doesn't matter what the drink is. Did you put new ice in it this morning?
I did.
And you're going to empty it out tonight?
Well, it didn't have ice in it. I got one at the house, and believe it or not, the day before yesterday at supper, I fixed myself a big glass of unsweetened tea. This is actually a cup, though. It's not one of these. Well, anyway,
So this doesn't keep the ice.
Yes, this keeps the ice, yeah.
Okay.
But I got up the next morning, and I still had ice and unsweetened tea in my cup, so I just kept drinking it, because why wouldn't I? Why would I waste that? Why would I throw it out? That's the point of having this, is that I can use it until the ice is gone.
What I'm saying is, you just said you put ice in it this morning. This is new. You just poured it in this morning.
Right. It was empty yesterday.
Sorry. I was trying to be and I blew it. You logicked out of the situation, and there you go.
Because that's what I do. I speak in logic and reason, and you speak about, you know, faith and Hokie Blasters. But I will get home.
Hokie Blasters?
I didn't want to say Hokie religion because I didn't want to offend you.
You're just quoting a movie.
Yeah, I know.
You know what Han Solo's last words were? May the force be with you.
Well, you know, I know how y'all feel about those deathbed confessions wiping everything away. But
that wasn't a deathbed confession.
That's true. It wasn't.
She knew there was more to him than money.
Yeah, she did, didn't she? May the force.
I'm really glad, you know, we're jumping around here trying to get out.
Do you subscribe to the theory that Han knew that he had to kill him and he's the one who pressed the button on the lightsaber? Like, that he knew what was going to happen?
No. Because Leia said, go save our son.
But what if he knows that their son is the one that's going to bring balance to the Force, and that he has to go? Because I think that Kylo Ren is the one that's going to bring balance to the Force, not Rey.
I think that. I don't want to say too much.
You've already read the spoiler, in other words.
Not on purpose.
Oh, man. That sucks.
Not on purpose.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you go fishing around for that stuff.
Well,
you can't avoid them. That's why I haven't read anything about it. You think I've seen 10, 15, 20 articles this past week that I want to read? I have not read them because I know that somewhere in there it's going to tell me. And that's not anything. I know that.
Because you're a bastion of self-control.
I know that he's going to rip Georgie. That's right. That's what I'm known for. I know he's going to rip Georgie's arm off.
Right.
I know how the story ends. But I still don't want to. I don't want it spoiled for me.
Right.
Because it's been a few years since I read the book. You know.
That's a big old thick book.
It is, man. And it's weird because I picked it up the other day. I was going to buy a new copy of it and read it again. Like, when I had the book, it was like a regular size novel.
Yeah.
This book's like this thick. And like, what happened? How did they blow these words up to make that books. Why do that? Why can't I just get a small copy of it like I used to have?
I don't know that there were ever small copies.
There was, Heath. I had a copy of it.
But that's not a small book.
Yeah, but it was like novel sized. It wasn't like oversized. It wasn't the size of that notebook there.
There you go. I got you. Yeah. I got you. I understand. I got you.
Yeah, it was a thick book, but it wasn't.
Well, that's a story for another day.
It's all so they can charge more for the book.
That's right.
What it is. Because I look, the copy that I had, I paid like $7 for it. When I opened this one up, the words were the same size, but they had this much white around them on both things. And they charged $16 for the name.
And then they tell you, save the environment.
Yeah.
They're going to kill all these trees.
Yeah, these guys, you know, it's like Al Gore flying around in his private jet.
That's right.
Everybody to save the planet.
That's right. That's right. Al Gore.
What's Al Gore's carbon footprint? Without any offset.
Would you like to put your carbon footprint somewhere on
No,
him?
I like Al Gore, man. I think he's telling a great truth. I really do. I do think it is an inconvenient truth that people... Please don't tell me that global warming's not real and that it's not true. And I do believe that it's a real thing, and I do believe that it's true. And I think he tells some good stuff, and I think he's got some great information about things that have happened around the world. What I'm saying is, what is his carbon footprint without any offsets that he's purchased? Because that's what they do. They buy those offsets.
But do you know who he's buying the offsets from?
Who?
Companies he's invested in.
Okay.
It's all... That's what I'm saying. It would be the same as a preacher who's telling me, you know what, man? You buy this, you know, you send us $20, I'm going to send you this cloth that I wiped my forehead with and I prayed for.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And then if there's a hurricane here, I'm not going to let anybody stay in my church.
Okay.
Now, I knew you were going to point
out. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened either.
I just thought it was funny to watch it happen.
I'm going
to
tell you, but I was really surprised that people were commenting on something that they didn't know about.
Right.
So we'll have to talk about the global warming deal because, like, you know that part of the inconvenient truth is a scene pulled right out of The Day After Tomorrow.
All right.
Because, no, I'm talking about they took the footage, and like the people from Day After Tomorrow are like, that's our footage. Like, what, y'all can't use our footage.
Right.
But I mean, I think the planet's changing. I don't think there's any argument there. I do think that
I told you what I think. I think we're the fleas on the dog's back, and every now and then, the dog's got to scratch and shake a couple of them loose.
That's one way to look at it. That's one way, and I look at it the other way.
What? That we're the dog, and
I don't want to be the dog or the
dog is there for us to ride around on and treat as we please. And abuse it and not take care of it and not be good, you know, stewards of it. And then just expect it.
Well, why do we need to be good stewards of it? If there's...
Why do we need to treat the planet that we live on with respect?
Yeah, why? No, tell me. Like, no. Why does it matter? Does it matter that we've been given dominion over the world and we've been commanded to be good stewards? That big, and we failed at it.
Yeah.
I failed at it.
Yeah, I mean, we all fail and fall short.
You know? I believe there's, we all have fallen short, yes.
You know?
See, we do agree on some things.
Oh, listen, I never said we didn't.
Listen, hey, one thing we agree on is I got to go pick my kid up. So, hey, my lovely son, Drake, whom I'm well pleased.
My one and only son.
I just need a hug and a kiss. So, hey, talk to us on Twitter. I'm at Heath Mulliken.
Before we go, I hope you don't have the same problem in the pickup line.
Oh, goodness gracious. So, I should have videoed that. Yeah,
no, you shouldn't have. No, you shouldn't have. I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.